In a world filled with war, hate, suffering, and Justin Bieber, two guys fix it all with a battle about a movie. One film, two opinions, one coin, two sides. They feud. You decide. It's time for Film Feud.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Film Feud, your favorite movie podcast ever.
Are we now?
Everybody's favorite movie podcast has to be Film Feud. You know why? Because we are the podcast where we debate whether top rated movies should be top rated. Everybody likes to do that.
Much needed, I feel, in this space.
Much needed. Wow. We just looked at the market and we were like, how can we change the world? What gap can we fill? And here we are.
Yeah.
Just for any new listeners, anybody who's forgotten, anybody with amnesia, do you mind explaining what we're doing here, Vikram?
Yeah. Also, hi, I'm Vikram.
Oh, hi, I'm Vidur.
We take a movie from the IMDb top 250.
Randomly.
Yes, on a very much random basis. And we toss a coin.
Randomly.
Again, yes. And heads argues for that particular movie, said movie, and tails argues against it.
It's like you take a film and then you feud it. Film, feud. Boom. Let's do it.
I think you ruined it now.
Oh yeah, I overexplained. Always a problem with me. My bad. Why don't we continue? The movie, the film, the cinematic piece that we are feuding over this week is the one and only Jurassic Park.
Jurassic Park. Original, the original.
The Jurassic Park. In fact, the Jurassic Park. Or if you're Spanish, the Jurassic Park.
We're not.
Oh, yeah, you're right. We're not.
So yes, Jurassic Park it is. And let's just toss that film feud coin and decide who argues for and who argues against.
Let's toss that coin.
So I'm tossing the coin. Heads, I argue for. Tails, I argue against. Let's do this. So I got tails, which is exactly what I wanted to do here. Argue against this.
Against this masterpiece.
This piece of junk.
Jurassic Park is an awesome movie. We all love it from our childhood. You are so screwed and I am so happy to be arguing for it.
Yeah, man. I'm not worried at all.
You just agreed with me. You just said, yeah, man. It's your subconscious. You can't hide it.
Okay. It's also my English.
I would shove the Jurassic Park theme in your face right now, except I can't exactly remember it, but
it's not that great, that's why.
I knew you'd say that. It's only because I haven't seen it in a long time. All the more reason why I'm looking forward to watching this film.
Oh, dude, you're gonna hate it. You're gonna have a tough time this one.
I can see the sparkle in your eye at the prospect of watching this movie. This is just an amazing Spielberg 90s masterpiece that just made us feel all good and wonder and joy inside in the way only he could. And you know this, and we know this, and I'm so pumped to watch this and kick your ass in the feud.
Don't put words in my mouth. You don't know what I know. You don't know what I feel.
Why don't we get to it? But before we do, let's not forget to give a special shout out to our sponsors for the week.
Of course.
Vikram, who's our sponsor this week?
Our sponsor is a delightful man. He's a delightful, delightful chap.
Oh, it's a fellow.
Yeah, it's a fellow. It has to be a fellow. Things can't give us money.
That's actually exactly how sponsors work. Usually they are products.
Products or companies, but this is one person, one particular individual. It's Prem the Jasbati Halwai.
Excuse me?
Prem. You know Prem, right? The Jasbati Halwai from around the corner?
Jasbati. Yeah. Just for a more global listener base, mind explaining what Jasbati means?
Jasbati is like, he just...
Is that his middle name? Prem the Jasbati Halwai.
You think Halwai is his last name?
Of course. If soda bottle opener wala, somebody's profession can be their last name.
Uh-huh.
The guy who just goes around opening soda bottles.
According to that, his name should be Halwai Wala.
Halwai Wala? No, let's not get diverted. Wait a second. Who is this fellow? How is he sponsoring us? Why did he sponsor us?
It's this dude. He has a sweet shop just around the corner from where we live. And Jasbati basically means, loosely translated, he takes everything personally. He just gets personal with you, just gets...
And that's part of his brand.
It's sweets. It's become not of his product, but of his personality. And part of the reason why his shop does so well is
Because he's just Pathi?
He's just Pathi. It's just his personality. People come to interact with him, just like tick him off and stuff.
Well, thanks a lot, Prem, the Jaspati Halwai.
Yeah.
Also, we got halwa, a sponsorship.
Yeah, and I kind of sold it forward.
Yeah, just, where's my halwa? Just,
no, I made some money off it.
Where's my money then?
Spent it on better halwa.
Oh, man. As usual, no money in my pocket. But still, Prem uncle, Prem sir, Prem ji, thank you so much for sponsoring this episode.
Yeah. He's a man, dude.
That's great. Why don't we get to it, Vikram?
Let's do it, man. I'm so pumped and really looking forward to handing your ass to you on a halwa plate.
Ooh, I'm so scared. Just like the characters in this movie are going to be when I watch it. Let's go.
Let's go, man.
Let's go watch this movie.
What a god-awful piece of shit that is, dude.
Ooh, what an unpredictable response.
So bad. It's so bad.
It's so bad.
It's
Jurassic Park.
So bad.
One of the greatest performing movies, one of the game-changing cinematic experiences of all time.
None of that matters, man.
The best cinematic product of the 90s. It's so bad.
You're just using big words like cinematic art product history. And like trying to like use them in different permutations.
Firstly, you need to read more if you think those are big words. Secondly, may I recommend a reading for you? Jurassic Park, the novel. Michael Crichton's Jurassic Park.
I won't be surprised if that... Look, books are usually better than the movie adaptations. So I won't be surprised if it's better than this.
What a high-flying opinion to hold.
Oh, stop saying ooh to everything.
This movie rocked. It's like... For kids, for adults. I mean, this movie is classic Spielberg. And Spielberg is a legend for a reason. This is the best version of Spielberg out there. I haven't seen Jaws, full disclosure, but I don't think I like it. It's kind of before my time. I know it started a genre, but, you know, things evolve. Jurassic Park is the culmination of what he started with Jaws. A wholesome, family, exciting, visually stunning, effectively a monster movie. And yet it plays with certain themes. Some of them might not work. I'm sure you'll bring some of those themes up, like fatherhood and all that. But family entertainment out of a monster movie that just pushes the art form, pushes cinema forward. What is there not to like? What is there not to like?
Yeah, we'll talk about that. Don't worry. And I know you haven't seen Jaws. I feel like this is more Spielberg influenced by his Indiana Jones stuff than his Jaws stuff. I've seen both, obviously, and you've seen Indiana Jones as well.
I have.
It's more a culmination of what he did or what he was trying to get at in terms of pushing out in terms
adventure.
Of cinema. Yeah, like something that's not been seen on screen before and stuff like that. So I think it tilts more towards that. Jaws was pure jump scares and stuff like that. So it was also very unique. I agree, Jurassic Park's pretty unique for its time, especially, but...
Just on that note, to interrupt you.
Okay.
It holds up.
No, it doesn't. That's
of course it holds up.
No,
what are you saying? I mean, a scene here and there doesn't, but the fact that he used practical, mechatronic, animatronic dinosaurs made so amazingly well. I actually wish I'd looked up the name of all the production designers who were mainly responsible. Amazing. It, for the most part, holds up. Some parts where they use green screen and stuff, maybe not. But the fact that it's all practical actually is the reason it holds up.
Look, we discussed this a lot during the podcast where we discuss older movies and we kind of go back and forth about whether they hold up or not. I don't even give any shade to all the green screen stuff because technology at the time, as long as they're trying to portray something and it comes across to you, to viewers, and both of us are fairly reasonable in our understanding of technology in movies. So the green screen stuff is not even there. And like, they did a pretty decent job with the animatronics and stuff like that here. But the movie as a whole, I really don't think it holds up. And it was pretty evident halfway into the movie.
The movie as a whole is a separate discussion. But the fact that the effects of the time hold up, like from 93, isn't that just amazing by itself? The fact that he created dinosaurs that multiple decades later still hold up as effects. That's amazing. The effects of the Avengers don't hold up today, you know?
But I agree, man. But I don't think the dinosaurs were something that was groundbreaking in terms of what he did. There were quite a few movies out there which he had a sort of a base to go off of. In
like
terms
what
of,
the Flintstones with Dino? What such movies are you talking about?
No, man. It doesn't have to be dinosaurs specifically. It's the tools he has in terms of of creating special effects at the time is what the base he has to go off of. And there were so many movies out there, like The Aliens and The Terminators and all, Indiana Jones to a certain extent, right? So he uses all of these tools to create dinosaurs, for example. It doesn't have to be specifically a dinosaur movie. But I don't think the animatronics
hold up as well.
How can you
even compare Alien and Aliens to this? I mean, this was real world immersion in a way and at a scale that was pretty much unimaginable before this. He just read this book and made it come to life. I haven't read the book. I'm guessing you haven't either. But I'm sure it was considered unfilmable at the time until Mr. Spielberg just came in and decided to do it and knock it out of the park.
I mean, sure, we can talk about that throughout. But I feel like what he was trying to do with the movie is so much more as opposed to what he was trying to do just from the animatronics point of view. So I want to discuss the movie. As the end product that it was, the combination of the story, the cast, the special effects and all of that, and the thought behind it. So let's just get into it, right? So let's just take this one from a more sequential point of view rather than specifics that we pick up from here and there.
Okay.
You cool with that?
I'm cool with that. All right. The only thing is, sequentially, the first aspect of this movie that I wish I could have experienced is to go and watch this movie in a theater, which would have been amazing.
I'm sure. That's always a big difference maker, even in like really, really bad movies. I'm not saying this is a really, really bad movie, but...
Oh, little concession I see.
Oh, yeah. It's not a really, really bad movie. Surprise, surprise.
Okay.
But that's always a difference maker. I agree. And
so let's go sequentially. But again, let's just establish like this is essentially a monster movie. And yet somehow it's a family movie, right?
Alien is a monster movie.
This is kind of like Alien except on an island, isn't it?
No, man. It's so much more. It's so much more like sci-fi and fantasy. So many things baked into this. In terms of that, it's extremely unique as the value proposition of this movie is. I don't believe it's like a pure monster movie at its core.
It is. It's basically people being chased by monsters, and there's a B plot of, I don't know, them trying to turn the lights on and lights off in the park. And then those people start getting chased by monsters. And then they all come together and they get chased by more monsters. And eventually a bigger monster rescues them.
I don't think this is a monster movie primarily with all of the other complimentary stuff going along with it. I think they try to do a lot with this movie, which had core themes which are at par or if not superseding the monster movie at it. There's a lot of humanity that they try to show, like the wonder that you see when you see, like, you know, things that don't exist in this world.
For sure, wonder was a big part of it.
So stuff like that. Why don't we just dive in and take it as it goes and just explore all these themes as they come along.
Okay, cool. Why don't we just dive in?
So the first question I want to pose to you is, let's just skip across all the part where like Sam Neill and Laura Dern, like, they're finding fossils and all that.
Yeah, character introductions, sure.
Yeah, sure. Also, there's a kid at that fossil site. I don't know why.
Yeah,
what's
I don't know
a kid
why
doing there?
Well, firstly, the very start of the movie is the scary opening, where they give a hint to the monster. I know it's not a monster movie and all, but it kind of sets the theme very interestingly. Like, you're kind of a little on edge. You're kind of scared. You don't know what's going to happen. And then I know you want to skip the character introductions, but I think John Hammond is just, like, an amazing character.
Yeah.
Played wonderfully by Mr.
David Attenborough.
Yes, what a legend.
It's Richard, actually.
Oh. Well played, sir. Both of them are legends, let's be fair.
Yeah, they're all legends, man.
And I think it's so appropriate that Richard Attenborough is in this movie while David Attenborough is the most famous naturalist in the world and whatnot.
Yeah.
And he just plays it with such joy and wonder, and he spares no expense, which is a running theme of his character in the movie. Poor guy, spares no expense. But yeah, he is like, usually it's like the sort of mad scientist, crazy overlord character. And I don't even care like how it plays with the tropes. I just thought he was a fun character, great opening. He's very playful. He's so happy with what he's accomplished, and he gets those people on board. I love that scene.
Okay, since we're on the late, great Richard Attenborough, I have a few points that I wanted to discuss. How is he not bankrupt, firstly? And I know it's a stupid question to ask. It's not explained what he does for a living or where his family fortune comes from or whatever. So it's just something that popped up in my mind. He mentions some park in Kenya, which is peanuts compared to this island of Costa Rica that he has. It's just, baffles me how he's not bankrupt, because he hasn't made much money from what he's doing here, and he spent all his
This is just a side hustle from him.
So he's okay. So dude, I'm assuming he's like some super, super rich, like the richest person.
Yeah, for all you know,
ever.
He's like a
he's like Warren Buffett times three in terms of net
For all you know, he's like a trouser baron. He owns like half the trousers in the world or something. Yeah. You don't know what he
possibly,
does.
Possibly. It's just a question I wanted to ask you, if you had any thoughts on that.
Yeah, maybe his company makes all the white clothing in the world.
Maybe.
Since that's what he loves to wear. Dude, I went to the Hearst Castle, William Randolph Hearst's literal castle on the Pacific Highway. And this guy...
The United States of America.
In the United States of America. This guy, he used to like import panda bears and penguins and just put them in Northern California for fun. And then he used to just import ice into the mountains so he could, you know, maintain these animals. He built a railroad so that his celebrity friends could come reach him. And you're like...
But did he buy an island...
In Costa Rica.
Put dinosaurs in there.
Very cheap. Not that we know of, but he seems like someone who would.
Yeah. I mean, sure. It's just a smooth point, I guess. It's a movie. It's a fictional movie. So
exactly.
It could be anything.
I'm glad you defeated your own point.
Yeah.
Thanks.
But a couple of follow-up points. So later on in the movie, his grandkids are an integral part of the story here. They go missing at one point, right?
Yeah.
And they go missing where you know that there are T-Rexes and Velociraptors just running around the park. So obviously, it's concerning for a grandfather. And this scene where he's just sitting there eating soup or cake or whatever, just very, very calmly talking about how he spared no expense, while his grandchildren are out there stranded.
What is he supposed to do? Go out with a machine gun and go rescue them?
No, just be a little more concerned, man. Just like make sure the operation's going. He sent out people to maybe rescue them who he hasn't heard from. He's just sitting there eating.
He's an experienced people manager, okay? He's a gazillionaire. He knows that the best way to get the most out of people is to give them a lot of ownership.
Look, I would believe you, but then there are scenes where he's losing his shit that his grandkids are missing. So there's just this polarity, which I don't understand, which makes me think that there's like something sinister about him.
I can't believe your nitpicking has started already. This is getting ridiculous. Do you have any
My job on this episode currently is to nitpick and show you flaws in this movie, which makes it not great a movie.
It's not
a
nitpicks. You don't have any real solid reasons to not like this
movie.
No,
I'm getting
there.
You started talking about Richard Attenborough, so I have my
nitpicks.
Excuse me,
the late, great Richard Attenborough, who I for a moment ago thought was David Attenborough.
I'm pretty proud of myself for that one. There's something sinister about this guy, man. He's just like...
That's great.
He gives out this vibe of like a warm, hearty fellow at one time and then like a cold-blooded killer at the other. He could be any.
he's like what Jay Gatsby would have been if he was allowed to grow up, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, really lovable character at the core, but who knows where he made his money, but he wants to do some good in the world.
I get it, dude. I get it. So let's move on. Let's move on from Richard Attenborough. So let's just skip all of the intro parts to where Sam Neill and Laura Dern actually end up coming to the park with a very annoying Jeff Goldblum by their side.
Jeff Goldblum. What an amazing addition to this movie. I was very confused by his character. I remember even when I first watched it being really confused why he was there. He's a mathematician and whatnot. And then...
What's he doing there?
Firstly, in the book, he's like a chaos theory expert and the lawyer brings him because he is actually quite well equipped to sort of take a different perspective and give his perspective on nature and animals. I haven't read the book, but...
No, that's what they tried to show in the movie as well.
Yeah, I'm going off the movie itself, but the point is they infused Jeff Goldblum into the character. They let him go full Goldblum. And I think they're so self-aware of it because at some point, John Hammond tells... or refers to Jeff Goldblum's character as having a deplorable excess of personality. Mm. Nothing has ever defined Jeff Goldblum better than that. He is still that person.
Yeah, I guess we understand him the same way, except that you look at it positively and I look at it negatively.
He has all the best lines. He has the best topless shot in the movie.
Yeah, he's much needed. He's like the Salman Khan of Jurassic Park.
He is the Salman Khan of Jurassic Park. He just infuses a sense of fun and joy into the movie, but at a very highbrow, pretentious level. It's just the amalgamation of everything plus Jeff Goldblum is perfect.
I get it. But what I fail to understand, and the movie does try to dwell on it, is... why is he there? He's purely a character in the movie then. Like, his the reasoning behind his character being on the island is it just makes no sense, which it's fine, whatever. He's there. It's a fun character, which you would expect the audiences to relate with. I did not at all. I've never liked Jeff Goldblum in my life. Anything that he's been in, it
How
just annoys me.
How dare you, sir?
I dare.
Have you not seen David Cronenberg's The Fly?
Yes, I have. I hated that movie.
You hate everything good.
Absolutely hated that movie, man. So Jeff Goldblum's there. And what I don't get is they go on that first Jeep ride and they start seeing... Obviously, Hammond doesn't tell them anything, right? It's like a surprise for all these guys. And Sam Neill notices the dinosaurs. He makes Laura Dern notice the dinosaurs. They're in wonder. They're all of this.
The very first dinosaur scene. Is it a brontosaurus or something?
Some of saurus, whatever. Yeah. And they're looking at the dinosaur. It's they're acting in terms of the wonder they're feeling. Kind of possible. I sort of felt that too. What I fail to understand is how did they not ask the how question sooner?
They ask it like 2 minutes later.
No, they don't.
Yeah, they do.
No, they don't.
Dude, can you even imagine your response if you just came across a dinosaur?
Being a scientist, that's going to be my first question.
No, being a scientist...
After seeing it in front of my eyes, it's going to be like, how is that thing in front of my eyes? Rather than, oh my God, that's that raptor, Saurus Morris.
Spoken like a true person who's never seen a dinosaur.
Yeah, I guess you got me there.
The first time you went to Disney World, did you ride the ride and enjoy it? Or did you first go like, oh, how does this roller coaster stay in like the loop? How does it not fall out? No, that's the second question.
Full disclosure, never been.
This is why you're like this.
And secondly...
This explains everything.
No, secondly...
How can you enjoy Jurassic Park when you've never experienced...
You're equating a child going to Disney World with a full-grown scientist of a man looking at a dinosaur in front of him.
No, I'm equating a child never gone to Disney World...
Absolutely no comparison.
Being deprived of wonder, joy, and thrill in his life, looking at Jurassic Park and be like, oh my God, how are the scientists not asking the how questions sooner?
Yeah.
Who gives a crap?
I give a crap, man.
Who gives a dinosaur crap that Laura Dern goes through?
Yeah, also she's a dinosaur doctor all of a sudden.
She's a paleobiologist.
Oh, the dologist. I think that's the game.
Paleontolobiologist.
Paleobiologist is, I think, what you're trying to go for.
Sure. That's
not a word. I just made it up. But yeah, whatever, man. Like, yeah, she can understand why that dinosaur is feeling what she is.
That scene is actually, I felt, the only weak special effects part of that movie, where it's so clearly a green screen and they're like so close to the dinosaur, but they're not. They try to show it at scale. That part I felt maybe does not hold up in today's green screen world. Everything else, especially because it's more animatronic, really held up. And I thought that scene completely displayed the wonder. At some point, Sam Neill literally falls to his knees because he's just so taken aback. And Jeff Goldblum, of course, he's like something along the lines of that crazy son of a bitch did it. Because it is. The first thing you're hit by is wonder. You're looking at 65-million-year-old dead birds come to life at the scale of a goddamn dinosaur.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was shown perfectly.
I think the most meaningful part of this movie and the only scene where it's they hit very close to what I feel it really would have unfolded would be that roundtable discussion they have of the implications of what Richard Hammond has done, right? And he was expecting Sam Neill to go his way or maybe Laura Dern to go his way. And the only one who ended up going his way was a money-making lawyer.
Yeah.
So that scene, I think, was well fleshed out. And I attribute that scene to the book because I'm sure that was there in the book.
I'm sure it was in the book as well, mainly because of that well-crafted Jeff Goldblum line where he says you were so busy figuring out whether you could, you didn't stop and wonder if you should.
Right.
And that does sound like something that would be in the book.
Yeah.
And well, that's great. It was a great fleshed out scene and actually thematically sets up the whole movie, right? Like man against nature, man toying with nature.
Right, right.
Man destroys God, God destroys man, man creates dinosaurs, dinosaur eat man. And to top it all off, woman inherits the earth. Laura Dern's feminism was just inserted at key points in the movie and they didn't like overdo it. It was great. They in fact used John Hammond as somebody who's very conservative, has old school opinions and says that I should be the one going out and trying to rescue.
Save, yeah.
And Laura Dern goes like, we'll just tackle your stupid old person
sexism
later.
Yeah, yeah, true. Let's just come to the best part, according to me, of this movie.
Wow, you're doing my job for me.
Yeah, it's Newman dying.
Good old Newman trying to sell dinosaur secrets gets poisoned by something sorry.
I don't even know what his actual name is. He's just Newman for me forever.
It's Newman, of course. In fact, when he was dying, I felt like saying, oh, the humanity.
And according to me, that was the best part of this movie, and it happened fairly early, so the movie kind of peaked way too soon.
All right, let's just forget the jokes here. The best part of this movie, I'll be willing to accept a lot of answers apart from your Newman joke answer. Mm-hmm. The first scene with the T-Rex, I mean, that was unbeatable, man. Like, the amount of tension building, which I will grant, he overdoes a little bit on the tension building.
Dude, the tremor effect is overused.
The tremor effect.
It's unbelievable. And it's used very conveniently, if you think about
it. Sure. I think, I haven't seen Jaws, but I know a decent amount about it. And I think it came from Jaws, where he got a lot of juice out of not showing the shark, because, you know, that's how he built up the suspense, and the shark itself wasn't that good looking. So he used what he knew. But at least the first time it comes with the T-Rex, that whole T-Rex sequence with the two Jeeps is so mind-boggling, man. Firstly, he does it from the kid's perspective, which is, of course, a Steven Spielberg speciality. But that adds that extra layer of fear, essentially, as an audience member. Mm-hmm. And then to actually see the T-Rex. A lot of people actually die in this movie, which sets the stakes very, very high. Some of those characters you actually get to know and love. And I mean, I was like on edge because I hadn't seen this movie in a while. Mm-hmm. Now, again, I'll grant you a few things. Like, he overdoes the tension building and the cutting close. At some point, the Jeep is about to fall on them. And then at some point, the kid is stuck to the fence. And at some point, she's going to...
That little boy should have died, man.
This is just separate from the events of the movie. Huh? He just hated the boy.
It's unbelievable how many times he came close to just being like obliterated and just like something happens and he's still alive. But just to touch upon the tremor effect, right? So later on, they show the tremor effect for a raptor as well. Whereas a raptor is literally a 50 kilo Vikram walking around. And from like two rooms across, you had that tremor effect of water in a glass. And they just create the tremor part when it's convenient, right? It's convenient for a raptor to build a scary thing, but most of the times the raptor's just sneaking up on you. Like, the ranger dude doesn't realize the raptor's right next to him. Sam L. Jackson obviously perishes to the raptors, and I'm sure he didn't hear them coming. And when he wants to build that tension, he does a tremor for the raptors. And conveniently, the bloody climax of this movie is a T-Rex walking into a museum and eating these raptors up.
Surprise, T-Rex!
And neither do the humans notice that a T-Rex is walking up, nor do the raptors, who are supposed to be super instinctive and all. They don't notice a T-Rex is walking up.
Yeah, T-Rex melded with some other DNA. So maybe one of those DNAs
he can
was
tiptoe
like,
around.
Yeah, maybe it's like some cat DNA that allows him to tiptoe around.
And like the first few times they show the tremor effect is obviously the...
That time he's using his other DNA, Elephant DNA.
You just explained it. It all makes sense to me.
Listen, some things are convenient for the sake of the movie, but you're overthinking it, man. And speaking of convenience, you've conveniently skipped over one of the best parts of this film, is the score and soundtrack.
I
don't say it.
It's, you know, you attribute a lot to
don't
score
even
and soundtrack.
Say this score and soundtrack is not up there with the best ever.
It's definitely not up there with the best ever. It's very average. It's great. It's a good soundtrack. It
average?
It does its job in terms of making you feel things which are very specific to the
average?
Scene that's happening. Yeah, it's very, it's okay. It's,
this is
not,
John
Williams. Oh my God, it's so good. It's a good soundtrack.
This is John Williams' best soundtrack after Star Wars. Everybody knows this.
Yeah.
John Williams just escalated this movie to another level, because this movie is a lot about wonder and then it's a lot about horror. And John Williams just plays off those with his music so amazingly. The sense of awe and fascination, happiness, excitement, wonder. All of the initial premise building, world building of this movie in Jurassic Park is so greatly, greatly complemented by John Williams' music. I can't believe you didn't grant that. I mean, this is one of the most famous soundtracks of all time.
It's great. It's a nice soundtrack. It's definitely not like, it doesn't pull the movie down or anything like that. But I don't think it enhances the experience as much as you like to say it would. Oh, man. It's, yeah. I don't think it's definitely up there in terms of, you know, like how soundtracks sort of transcend the movie and they become like part of pop culture.
Yeah, like Jurassic Park.
No, man. Jurassic Park is definitely not in there. I can like maybe come up with five.
I'll make a concession. I briefly mentioned it earlier. Sam Neill's kid-loving arc is kind of ham-fisted and shoved in there for no reason.
Dude, I have a Sam Neill question for you. I've seen a bunch of Sam Neill in movies and TV shows and all.
don't think I've seen him in anything else except for Jurassic Park 1 and 3.
He's been in a bunch of movies. I've seen him in this show. It's called Peaky Blinders. He plays like a thoroughbred Irishman in that. And if you would see that show...
Oh, is he Irish? Is it Sam O'Neill?
No, it's not. It's Sam Neill. And if that's the only Sam Neill you've seen ever, you would be convinced that he's Irish. And he's not. He's actually Kiwi. He's from New Zealand.
He's a fruit.
And his accent is so weird in this movie, man. Because I saw this movie after watching Peaky Blinders. And I was like, oh, Sam Neill is Irish. And he's definitely not American because he has that listen up, lad. Right? And stuff like that in the movie. And you see these breaks in the American accent. And then I looked it up and he's from New Zealand. It kind of makes sense. He's so bad at hiding his accent.
I didn't notice any of this. To me, Sam Neill was a dinosaurist. Nitpicking as usual.
Back to the whole him not loving kids and loving kids by the end of it. And how
so
he...
So sweet, yeah, yeah. But also so contrived. Yeah,
he comes to love kids because he spends a night with two kids. And he hates kids in general. And he spends a night like a...
As a father figure.
Yeah.
So I get what they're going for. Again, I'm the one conceding this. So I agree with you. It could have been better executed. It sort of shoved the whole kid theme in there. But, you know, Spielberg was sort of the kid genius when it came to films. So...
Yeah.
He tried his level best.
I guess. Next question for you.
Uh-huh.
This Asian geneticist who's sort of responsible for...
Oh, yeah. He's in all the Jurassic Park. He's the dude who ties all the movies together, apart from Raptors, I guess.
And then, you know how confident he was that, you know, all the dinosaurs in the park are female, so they're never going to breed?
Yeah.
And then he put that frog gene. And being like such a high-level geneticist, how did he not predict that they can change their...
Oh, I'm sorry. How did Alfred Nobel not predict that his bombs would be used as bombs? You create technologies and then sometimes you have to wrestle with their consequences, man. It happens.
Oh, okay.
Did I just take this to the next level?
you just took it to some level which is not relevant at all.
But what I remember from that scene, apart from this nitpick, how cool that first Dino birth is.
Dino. Yeah.
The little baby dinosaur, and John Hammond is so lovingly playful. He's like, I've been around for every birth, and so convincing, man. Like all the effects in Alien, although Alien was a much older movie, but you know those practical effects in Alien, they could get away with it because it's just Alien. You can kind of do anything you want and then say it's Alien, and sure, it's a little convincing, the chest burster scene, but this, how did he even do it? I mean, to this day, I don't know, like, did they really invent mechatronic mini dinosaurs that would do that? Or maybe it was puppets, I'm guessing. I don't even know. I'm gonna maybe look it up. But so cool, so convincing. Mm-hmm. And also the real horror of the movie hasn't picked up yet. So it really establishes that, oh, dinosaurs are cute, lovable animals before they become true monsters in the movie. Really love that scene.
I guess, man, it's I attribute it to us not fully understanding how that's happening to like our wonder associated with it.
Sure, great.
Yeah, for what it's worth, it's well done, I guess. But coming back to the Asian guy, you mentioned that he's in all the...
He has a name, okay? Stop calling him the Asian guy.
What's his name?
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm going to continue calling him the geneticist.
There we go.
Let's give him some respect. You mentioned he's in all the Jurassic Park movies, including Jurassic World. And he's primarily responsible for the chaos in Jurassic World. His character somehow takes a sinister turn in terms of using science and wonder and just forgetting about the consequences there.
Just as good old Goldblum predicted.
Yeah, just as good old Goldblum predicted. My question is, how is he retained as an employee of that company post this movie? How is he there in all of them?
Dude, come on. How are these idiot CEOs still retained? You just have a skill. You're the only person who can do the job.
No, does not answer my question.
No. He's who else has dinosaur experience? There's only a handful of people in this world.
Yeah, but he's done it. The technology's out there.
It wasn't like his fault.
Fault?
It was a lot of it had
it
to do with
fault,
Newman.
Not fault?
Newman's fault mainly for the crazy things that happened. I mean, listen, every movie, I haven't seen The Lost World, or at least I don't remember it. I've seen 3. I've seen World. And also, let's just wrap this discussion up. Thank God we're discussing only Jurassic Park 1, because that's the only one that deserves to be on the IMDb top
50. I agree. It's the best of the lot, for sure.
Of course. I mean, there's not even a comparison. But, you know, it's Newman's fault about everything that goes wrong.
Yeah. Good he dies.
Yeah, what a great death. I agree.
One of the last few things maybe I want to talk about is the middle act in this movie, right? It's literally maybe the top two most boring acts I've had to sit through in a movie, maybe along with off the top of my head.
Oh, you mean when they're being chased by dinosaurs, creatures that nobody had ever seen before?
No, it's more, the middle act is more them spending the night on that tree and like Sam Jackson trying to undo everything that Newman's done and like just unnecessary tension building here and there. It's not engaging at all. I mean, like, do you remember Fana, this Bollywood movie?
Fana. With Amir Khan and Kajol in the movie Fana.
Where Amir Khan literally had no dialogue. All he was only talking in idioms and couplets the entire time.
What?
Yeah, he had no dialogue. He was just like phrases, idioms, couplets.
So they were talking in idioms in this movie?
Him. Only Kajol was talking, right?
Please clarify your stupid comparison. Blasphemous comparison to Fana.
It's along with this movie, the top two most boring middle acts I've ever had to sit through.
Jesus. In fact, I thought they had some funny lines here and there in this movie, man. A lot of that came, I guess, towards the end of the first act. I remember a few, like, you know, when Jeff Goldblum, after they escape the T-Rex, says, do you think they'll have that on the tour? I think that's when he says it.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just, firstly, that's usually the second act, you know, after the inciting incident has happened, which in this case is the T-Rex with the jeeps and all the dinosaurs being let loose. That's when the character building happens. What do characters do in adversity? And that's when you get to know these characters, some of whom do not survive, mm-hmm. which is why you care that they do not survive.
Also, where did all of that, you know, that science team that they show in that initial tour and stuff like that, where were all these guys when all of this stuff was happening?
Oh, yeah, they went home.
They went home?
You just didn't see it, but there was this like one shift change,
uh-huh.
and that's when they went home, and only the core team survived.
Okay.
Some of them might be dead too, just on off screen, just like right. Sam Jackson, they die off screen. But unlike Sam Jackson, you don't get to see
the hand?
Dismembered arm.
Just comes out of a door on Laura Dern's shoulder.
And she just goes, you know, in any other movie...
Where does that arm come from?
In any other movie, the arm coming on someone is what would make them scream, you know? Not the fact that it's just dismembered. Somebody grabbing them. Yeah. And she just goes, oh, hey, Mr. Jackson.
Thank God you're here. It's just your arm.
Yeah.
Where does the arm come from? It just opens the door and just rests itself on her shoulder out of nowhere.
I think a great drinking game for Jurassic Park would be to drink every time someone screams in this movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Especially... proper, you know, Alfred Hitchcock psycho type screams that Laura Dern does.
It would make
times.
It so much more enjoyable.
Agreed. I suppose that would be true. I mean, on a certain level.
Yeah.
Maybe a little more scary as well, which translates to enjoyment for some. But I loved how like the traditional psycho, I can totally imagine Laura Dern in front of a mirror or a camera just practicing that scream over and over again and probably looking at Psycho shower scene as like a practice, like something to emulate.
Or the young girl in the movie too, she screams quite a bit.
Yeah, like future Laura Dern, she is basically.
Future Laura Dern, there we go.
Mm-hmm. The one thing I have to say that doesn't hold up in terms of... The one trivia I have to mention is that apparently the whole T-Rex's vision is based on movement.
Yeah.
Is total BS.
Oh, it is?
Not that dinosaurs coming to life aren't BS to begin with, but yeah, that was a little convenient in terms of the sequence of events, I must say.
Oh, so it's scientifically like proven it's not true or something?
I mean, that just doesn't make any sense. I mean, were T-Rexes real actually?
Yeah.
Are you sure? 100%. Did they have tiny arms?
I think so. They found fossils that prove that. So that's not false.
Well, there we go. There's a kernel of truth in all fantasy, isn't there?
Mm-hmm. Dinosaurs?
Yeah.
That dinosaurs existed?
Yeah.
Hmm.
They had feathers though, apparently.
Oh yeah, all of them?
Apparently.
Right. I mean,
but this movie just has come to define what dinosaurs mean to us in visually, right? Yeah. Every time you think dinosaur, you think a dinosaur from Jurassic Park. And I don't think that's going to change for a long, long, long time.
Maybe, maybe not. Maybe go f*** yourself.
Hashtag departed.
The departed, there we go. Showed dinosaurs way better.
What? How dare you talk that way about Jack Nicholson? As usual, you have pissed me off with your nitpicking
Success.
And ridiculous opinion on this movie. So I must ask, if you hold your stupid opinion and think that this movie does not deserve to be on the IMDb top 250, what would thou replace this movie with on the IMDb?
I have the perfect answer for this. And
You came prepared.
I came prepared, obviously. And I saw this movie and then just this curious light in me arose where I wanted to go check it out. And what's done way better and is not something totally off bounds of thinking and stuff like that is My replacement for this movie in the IMDb top 250 is, I would say, the very well done Jurassic Park in Hindi.
Okay, then I win the feud. You're granting me that Jurassic Park should be on it.
No, it's just way more entertaining because Hindi.
So you've watched Jurassic Park in Hindi?
Clips of it.
I don't think we can count dubs to air to Indian audiences on Star Plus.
Why can we not?
As replacements.
We must. I insist.
give me a flavor of Jurassic Park in Hindi.
They use a lot of chipkali in it, which is the Hindi word for lizard. And I don't know.
What is Jurassic Park in Hindi called?
It's sadly called Jurassic Park.
Well, there we go. That's the same movie then.
Okay, sure. But why would they keep calling them lizards? Is there no Hindi word for dinosaur?
Not that I know of for sure. Badi chipkali. Chipkala?
Chipkala. There we go.
Are lizards erstwhile dinosaurs?
Maybe not.
I thought birds are erstwhile. That's the whole point of Sam Neill, right? Like he also,
according to your theory, says that T-Rexes can't see unless you move. So I don't know how much of it is true.
Kernel of truth. The Colonel Sanders of truth is in there.
Yeah, so Jurassic Park in Hindi, 10 times better than Jurassic Park.
Personally, I'm taking it as a win. You still think this movie should be on the IMDb top 250. So what? It's in a different language. I'm sure it adds some ironic entertainment. But at the core, Jurassic Park is key. So yeah, thanks for that.
It's Jurassic Park, the world of dinosaurs versus Jurassic Park, badi chipkali ki dunya. It's kind of perfect, man.
The World of Dinosaurs is not a subtitle for Jurassic Park.
I just made it up just to add Buddy Shikali in there.
All right, great. So I guess that covers your stupid opinion and my stupid opinion.
Oh, thanks.
So how do you think we should wrap this up?
That's the Hindi version, by the way.
Okay, cool.
So that wraps up this week's episode of Film Feud.
I hope you had fun hearing us feuds.
I did.
I wasn't talking to you. I was talking to our lovely listeners.
Oh, yeah. Do let us know who you think won the feud. You can reach out to us on Twitter at FilmFeudPod and let us know who you think won this feud.
That's right. FilmFeudPod. F-I-L-M. Feud. P-O-D.
Ooh, feud is like one letter. There's no spelling for that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that works. You can also write to us at filmfeud@munchermedia.com and let us know your thoughts.
And now it's time to choose the film for the next feud. It's time to go to our trusty Film Feud wheel. Shall we, Vikram?
Let's do this. Ba-bum, bum, ba-bum. Ba-bum, bum, ba-bum.
Oh my God, we got Terminator 2.
Judgment Day.
That was a pretty good Terminator 2 you did there.
Ba-bum, bum, ba-bum.
What a movie.
Ba-bum, bum, ba-bum.
I'm not saying which way, just saying what a movie.
Ba-bum, bum, ba-bum.
What an interesting movie.
Ba-bum, bum, ba-bum.
When was the last time you saw Terminator 2?
A while ago, man. I don't remember, which usually means it's been at least 3 or 4 years.
I can't wait. This is going to be a good feud.
Dude, I'm so excited. Obviously, can't deny the fact that we saw it as kids and we loved it because we were kids, so we didn't know much better.
I refuse to confirm or deny that, actually.
Well played, sir. Well played. So next week's feud is going to be T2 Judgment Day. Make sure you guys tune in.
And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast listening.
See you guys next week.
See ya.
Ba-bum, bum, ba-bum.
Doo-doo-doo. Ha 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 ha.